Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Canto 3, chapter 25, text number 10. Atta me deva sammoham.
Atta me deva sammoham.
Apakrashtum tvam arhasi.
Apakrashtum tvam arhasi.
Yo vagraho hammamititi.
Yo vagraho hammamititi.
No, this is mametiti. Yeah. Etasmin yojitas. Tvaya.
Etasmin yojitas tvaya.
Atta me deva. Atta. Now. Me. My.
Deva.
O Lord.
Sammoham.
Delusion. Apakrash. To dispel. Tvam. You. Arhasi. Be pleased. Yaha. Which.
Avagraha.
Misconception. Aham.
I.
Mama.
Mine.
Iti.
Thus.
Iti.
Thus.
Etasmin.
Etasmin.
In this.
Yojitaha.
Engaged.
Engaged.
Tvaya.
Tvaya.
By you.
By you.
Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Now be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. Due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your Maya, and have identified myself with the body, and consequent bodily relations. Purport. The false ego of identifying one's body as oneself and of claiming things possessed in relationship with this body is called Maya. In Bhagavad Gita 15th chapter, the Lord says, I am sitting in everyone's heart, and from me come everyone's remembrance and forgetfulness. Devahuti has stated that false identification of the body with the self and attachment for possessions in relation with to the body are also under the direction of the Lord. Does this mean that the Lord discriminates by engaging one in his devotional service and another in sense gratification? If that were true, it would be an incongruity on the part of the Supreme Lord, but that is not the actual fact. As soon as the living entity forgets his real constitutional position of eternal servitorship to the Lord, and wants instead to enjoy himself by sense gratification, he is captured by Maya. This capture by Maya is the consciousness of false identification with the body and attachment for the possessions of the body. These are the activities of Maya. And since Maya is also an agent of the Lord, it is indirectly the action of the Lord. The Lord is merciful. If anyone wants to forget him and enjoy this material world, he gives him full facility. And not directly, but through the agency of his material potency. Therefore, since the material potency is the Lord's energy, indirectly it is the Lord who wants to give the facility to forget him. Devahuti therefore said, "My engagement in sense gratification was also due to you. Now kindly get me free from this entanglement." By the grace of the Lord, one is allowed to enjoy this material world. But when one is disgusted with material enjoyment and is frustrated, and when one sincerely surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord, then the Lord is so kind that he frees one from entanglement. Krishna says, therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, "First of all, surrender, and then I will take charge of you and free you from all the actions of sinful activities." Sinful activities are those activities performed in forgetfulness of our relationship with the Lord. In this material world, activities for material enjoyment, which are considered to be pious, are also sinful. For example, one gives something in charity to a needy person with a view to get back the money four times increased. Giving with the purpose of gaining something is called charity in the mode of passion. Everything done here is done in the modes of material nature, and therefore all activities but service to the Lord are sinful. Because of sinful activities, we become attracted by the illusion of material attachment, and we think, "I am this body. I think of the body as myself and of bodily possessions as mine." Devahuti requested Lord Kapila to free her from that entanglement of false identification and false possession. Atad me deva sammoham apat krashtum tvamarhasi yo vagraho ahammame titi etasmin yojitas tvaya. Anybody who even pretends to know something about spiritual life can tell you that the cause of our illusion is identification with the material body. So every spiritualist and every pseudo-spiritualist, every pretender to being something spiritual, understands, or is proclaiming, the error of bodily identification. But it's not so easy to actually give that up completely. It's described in the Upanishads and in the later Yoga Shastras that, first of all, the soul is sitting encapsulated within the heart, or at least the region of the heart. There's a different energy nexuses, pockets in the body, and one of the major chakras is the Anahata chakra, located in the region of the heart. It's not so much that we're sitting in a pool of blood inside the ventricles, but that we're located in the subtle body, located in the Anahata chakra, that's where the heart happens to be, the heart region of the subtle body. The soul, that's where he sits normally, unless he's lifted up or down to some other chakra, but his normal chakra is there. Consciousness resides there, in the heart. That's why in Sanskrit, manas can mean heart and also mind, because the mind actually is not in the brain, but in the heart. Normal seat of consciousness is in the heart. Because we're looking out of our eyes, we think we're behind our eyes. Because we put so much prominence on the visual perception, especially in modern civilization, we don't listen to anything. We just, we listen to music. Our brains are empty. We listen to loud music. And everything we just see with our eyes bugging out, eyes bugging out, and we're looking at everything. So our eye, in the modern world, the eye becomes the prominent sense rather than the ear. So we're sitting behind the eyes, apparently. So our self-conception is that we're somewhere behind the eyes in the brain. But actually, the soul is sitting in the heart region, normally. And then it's further described that he's surrounded by his pranas, and the body has an apparatus. The subtle body has 71,000 channels, nadis, emanating from the heart region. And those nadis perform various subtle functions, but we can also identify them with the nervous system of the body. Perceptions are received and orders are sent out to the organs to do things, and to the muscles and other organs. Voluntary and involuntary messages being sent back and forth. Our heart is told to beat by our involuntary part of our brain. Here, the brain's involved. Anyway, the brain is a switchboard. And through that nervous system, impulses are sent in and out. And so pleasure and pain impulses are coming in from thousands, tens of thousands of channels of input, bombarded by so much information. Information in the form of pleasure and pain sensations. It's hard for us not to become overwhelmed and to start thinking that this is our life, this bombardment of pleasure and pain sensations. It's hard for us to just discount it as insignificant when we're constantly experiencing it as our most important immediate experience, because our spiritual senses are shut down. We're not functioning spiritually, therefore all we know are the sensations of these nadis, of these nerve fibers. That's our whole life, because we're in material ignorance. So for us to give up this, on the presumption that it's unreal, is not so easy. You know, it's okay, I tell you, the pain is unreal, but when someone's hitting you on the head with a hammer, you know, it's only theoretical knowledge. You're feeling the pain. You're feeling the attraction of pleasure. So giving it up is a big struggle. Devahuti is asking her son for help in this, even though she's a very accomplished yogi herself. She's not an ordinary person who is actually so much in illusion and so much entangled. She's much less entangled and an illusion than the rest of us. She's practically as good as her husband, who has just taken sannyas and is free. He's on his path to liberation. She also wants her liberation. And she knows she needs help to get free from this material identification, aham mama. Because I'm feeling material pain, I'm identifying that and the body in which that pain is being experienced as me. And the things on the outside that give me pain, and then pleasure also. Because my pain and pleasure is being experienced in my body, I identify the body as me. It's the locus of my perception, my experience of pleasure and pain. And then I identify beyond, outside of my body, things and people that are causing me pleasure and pain. And I identify my relationship with them. They're mine. My friends, my family, my enemies, my property, and so on. Although I actually don't own all of it, the sense in which even in law that I own my children or my wife is limited. I own my car, and if I want to take the car and drive it off a cliff and destroy it, that's my right. It's my property. I can destroy my property. But in modern law, I cannot do that to my wife and children. I cannot just kill them on a whim or because I'm dissatisfied with them. I don't have that right. So my ownership of my family is limited, in a limited sense. I don't really own them. When we say my family, I have some relationship with them. I have some identification with them, a strong identification. And I have weaker identification with many other things in the world. My newspaper, you know, my culture, and so on. It's all my. Everything is of importance to us by connection with our own ego, because it serves some purpose for my pursuance of pleasure and avoidance of pain. So she's asking, please get me free from, help me get free from this avagraha. Not apostrophe, but avagraha in the sense of Prabhupada says misconception. Sri Goswami said, what did he say? Oh, something like obsession. I forget the word he used. Both are there. Agraha. Yeah, which is obsession, yeah. It's an obsession because of the misconception. If the relationship was actually what we think it is, if it was properly conceived, properly understood, that would be spiritual. And there would be no agraha. There would be perfectly appropriate attachment. In our spiritual life, mamata is important in the higher, in the intimate relationships with Krishna. Mamata is an important element. Without that mamata, you don't have an intimate relationship. All the higher relationships found in Vraja are predicated on the presumption that you, in a sense, own Krishna. What is it? One devotee, ISKCON devotee, was trying to preach to some Vrijvasis, to tell them, our Siddhanta. And the Vrijvasi just said, young man, don't you understand? For us, Krishna, we don't think of Krishna as God around here. Krishna is just one of us. Yeah. The Vrijvasis think they own Krishna, which is appropriate. It's actually the higher understanding. Mm-hmm. For those who have earned the privilege to that rasa, they actually have mamata, they have possessiveness over Krishna. And that is not an addiction, a false misconception, an obsession based on misconception. It's actually perfectly appropriate and perfectly correct. Actually, accurate perception of the proper relationship of the soul to God. When you have actual attraction and love for the Lord, you can claim possession over him. These are the qualities of devotional service. In the beginning, Rupa Goswami lists in the first chapter of the Bhaktivedanta Samrita Sindhu the six general characteristics of devotional service. And Srila Jiva Goswami points out for us that we can pair them into three pairs, and they correspond. They are the qualities that manifest respectively. First, the first two in Vaidhi Bhakti, the second two in Bhava Bhakti, and the third two in Prema Bhakti. On the three different levels of development, you get three different symptoms, or let's say distinctive properties of devotional service. Kleshagni Shubhada, first two. Moksha Laguta Kritsudu Labha, second two. Sandra Ananda Visheshatma, the third two. Sandra Ananda Visheshatma, and last, Shri Krishna Akarshani Chasa. So, ordinary devotional service in practice, as practiced by someone who is not yet liberated from his conditioning, still devotional service for him has beneficial properties. Kleshagni, it destroys his distress. This is a problem. Conditioned soul means we're dealing with the problem of pleasure and pain. Getting pleasure and avoiding pain. Like economic problem, a person who doesn't have always enough money has to worry about getting money. And the dynamics of economics is to get money, you have to take it away from somebody else by agreement or by force. There's business in which by agreement, sometimes treacherous, deceitful, agreement, you're actually cheating someone, you're lying to him and giving false grounds on which he should give you his money. But still, it's by agreement. It may be a deceitful agreement, but it's still agreement. But in the history of mankind, there have been many who don't bother with that. They just go out and conquer and pillage. And they take others' wealth by force. And then they establish themselves as a dynasty and are glorified in history. Yeah, but actually, they're just thieves. But that's very common in human society and in human history, that many get the wealth of others just by seizing it.
by force.
And actually, you know, what's considered legal and upright modern business is also not much, very often not much less rapacious than the ancient forms of just pillaging and taking. So in the economic question is solved only when you take away someone else's money and make it your own. But there's always that anxiety for getting money. Similarly, in general, the conditioned soul has to deal always with this more basic economic question of pleasure and pain. Money is just a way of buying medicine to fend off your diseases so you don't suffer, and building strong wall around your house and an electronic surveillance system to avoid people coming in and causing you pain. And then also buying the things that give you pleasure. So money is just a means. The real need is attainment of pleasure and avoidance of pain. In material life, the conditioned soul has to always be concerned about this. But the advantage for the conditioned soul of the practice of pure devotional service, we're not talking about mixed devotional service, but pure devotional service, is that, first of all, before you even advance yourself to any great degree in the process, even in the very beginning, it is shubhadat klesha gni. It creates good things for you. It brings what you want. And klesha gni, and it destroys your distress. That's what a conditioned soul wants. Acquisition of sources of pleasure, and avoidance or destruction of the sources of misery. And devotional service, better than economic development, or better than conquest in the mode of Genghis Khan, is the more efficient process is simply pure devotional service. You get what you want, and you avoid someone else taking away from what you have simply by performing devotional service. Krishna also said that in the Gita. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate. They may not have love, but at least they're engaged full time in worshipping me, and they're always thinking about me. They may be neophytes. Tesham nityabhiyoktanam yogakshemam vahamyam. Because they're regularly, constantly engaged actually in my service, although it's just service in practice, it's not service in love, still, I can't reciprocate in the best way. I can't reciprocate with such devotees on the level of rasa because they're not attuned to rasa. They're still on some other wavelength of sense gratification. So they can't respond, they can't appreciate loving exchanges. But at least I'll give them the material things they're hankering for, and I'll protect the things they already have. Yoga kshemam vahamyam. Pure devotees, or rather devotees who have come to the levels of bhava and prema, don't care for yoga and kshema. They don't let everyone come and steal everything I have. I'll be better off without all this garbage. You know? And I'm not going to lift a finger to acquire more material things. They're just a disturbance. Let me sit down and chant Hare Krishna. And if someone brings me something to eat, I'll eat. Otherwise, I'll starve. But neophyte devotee has to worry about his yoga and his kshema. So what is it? The insurance company of India, their motto is yoga kshema bahamyam. Yeah, that's well. Yeah, that's their logo. That's shubhada klesha gni. In the beginning, Krishna brings us everything good that we need and want, and he destroys everything bad that's giving us trouble. And that's what a conditioned soul is very pleased to receive. But when one gets to the stage of bhava, then is there more important benefits of devotional service. That it is mokshita lagukta krit. It's so good, pure devotional service, that it makes all the benefits of impersonal liberation seem very unimportant, undesirable, laguta. It really makes
liberation look very small. And Sudulabha, it's hard, it's very rarely achieved. Muktim dadati karachit nasma bhakti yogam. And this was Narada talking to the Pandavas who have bhakti. I think it was Yudhishthir was feeling a little discouraged hearing about Prahlad. Yeah, I could never be a devotee like that. He received Krishna's mercy. I'm just a materialist. I might as well just give up. He was starting to think like that. So to encourage him, Narada spoke a few verses, and this is one of them, I think, that, come on, Krishna is coming to you, leaving Dwarka. All of these, there's millions of devotees, billions of devotees in Dwarka. They managed to get him out of Vrindavan. You know, now that he's built a fortress for them in the middle of the sea, and he's living with them constantly. And somehow you, Pandavas, managed to get Krishna to leave Dwarka and come to Hastinapur, back, you know, back to the other side of India again. So what are you saying? What are you lamenting about, Yudhishthira? Krishna is coming to your house. He's acting as your friend, as your advisor, as your chariot driver and your messenger. And you think that you have no favor of Krishna. Now, you think you're so unfortunate. The fact that he's given you this pure love shows that you're the most favored devotees. Muktim dadati karyashit, the Supreme Lord Krishna sometimes gives liberation. He even gives it to demons like Shishupal Jarasandha. But he very rarely gives pure devotional service. And he's given it to you, so what are you lamenting about? That was not what Narada told Yudhishthira. Sudurlava. So one who has bhava is already, you know, got his foot within the door of prema. It's just a matter of that developing somewhat further. All the ingredients of the various kinds of bhava have to properly combine and coagulate, and they turn into prema. The ingredients are there. You know, he's already, you know, the preparation is already on the stove, and the cook knows what he's doing. So it's just a few minutes before the preparation will be done. This is the stage of bhava. So one should be very satisfied that I've gotten the rarest thing. For a neophyte to hear that bhakti is very rarely achieved can be a cause of discouragement. But for one who's already up to prema, up to bhava, then he should feel very, not proud of himself, but very happy that he's gotten, he's been given this rarest privilege of entering into Krishna's loving devotional service. But then there are even a higher stage of prema. When one reaches that stage, the benefits of devotional service are even more exalted. Sandra Ananda Visheshatma. In bhava, this is distinguished from prema, in that bhava is just like the beginning of the dawn. When the sky is turning a little pink, it's the sprout of love. It's just beginning to grow out of a seed. You know, that little sprout is just popping out of the seed. You know, you don't see the beauty and the glory of the whole plant, the flower, and the fruits at that stage. It's just the beginning. You don't experience what you experience in prema. In prema, it is complete, and the glory is fully blossomed. There, the two qualities are sandrananda visheshatma. It's full of the most intense ecstasy. That's a special, vishesha atma, special characteristic of prema, even in comparison to bhava. And then one last characteristic, Sri Krishna akarsha nichasa, and it can even attract Krishna. That means to bring him under control. It enchants Krishna, it allures him, and then he becomes the servant of his devotee when the devotee has prema. Especially in the higher rasas, that is very prominent, that Krishna becomes the possession of his devotees. Then he has to apologize that I have nothing left to give you. I've already given you myself, and I'm not going to give you anything material. That would be an insult. So I'll just have to remain in your debt. Pariyamtu sadhuna, you just have to be satisfied with your own good deeds. I can't repay you for them. So Krishna becomes indebted. Even after giving himself away, he feels like he hasn't given enough. That kind of mamata is not illusion. That is not something we should try to give up. We should try to obtain that by giving up all the material mamata, aham mameti, the material identification of I and mine, so that we can develop our spiritual identification of I and mine. That's what Devahuti is expressing here. Although she's not talking about the spiritual side, she's talking about giving up, the negative side of giving up the material attachment. But she's showing her spiritual attachment to the person she's talking to, her son, who happens to be God, Krishna's expansion. So, although the words say one thing, her actual behavior shows the other side too, that she does understand, although she isn't saying it here, but she's showing it in her dealing with her son, that she knows that attachment has two sides, a wrong side and a right side. And when we give up the wrong attachment, we should then move on to establishing the right attachment. That's one of the first things Kapiladeva will tell her in this chapter. Prasangam yajaram pasham atmano kavayo viduhu sa eva sadhu shukrito moksha dwaram apavritam. Attachment is the inescapable noose. Pasham is a noose, not necessarily for hanging somebody, but you use it for catching little calves. Pasha. I think it's also what we call snare in English. A noose is also used for catching small birds. One of Prabhupada's favorite phrases was the snares of Maya. Mm. Yeah. Snare is particularly a trap for catching small birds. And it's usually a noose made out of rope. Mm. Yeah. So the snare is for catching birds. The snare is for lassoing. It's a lasso. For lassoing the little calves, and it can also be used to hang a criminal. Yeah, pasha. Yamaraj has got his pasha. That's for dragging souls to his court, and Yamadutas use that pasha to drag the sinful souls 93 million miles through the burning sands to Yama's sadhanam. That's all pasha. Pasangam yajaram pasham. The noose around the neck of the conditioned soul, that is his attachment. Attachment to other people, attachment to things of enjoyment. Atmano kavayo, every intelligent person, every learned person knows this. Only fools are not aware of it. But what many so-called intelligent scholarly people don't know, even apparently saintly people don't know, is that the same, basically the same attachment, it's not something different, it's just the same impulse, the same energy directed differently, same energy, same electricity in practically the same apparatus is used to make cold in a refrigerator or to make hot. Almost the same circuitry can be used for the opposite purposes, to create heat or to create cold. Like that, attachment, the same energy of attachment, the same dynamics, if directed in the opposite way, if focused instead of on material things and material people, if it's focused on spiritual things and spiritual people, sadhushu, anything connected with Krishna, Krishna sambandha vastunaha. Anybody or anything connected to Krishna, if you put your attachment on them, moksha dwaram apavrita. Instead of being the rope, the noose that will drag you to hell, it is the means that opens up the gateways to liberation. So that's what Kapiladev tells Devahuti, but she's already anticipating that. She already pretty much knows that. She's saying half of it here, and she's expressing the other half of it by her behavior, that she is asking these questions because she's attached to her transcendental son and is taking him as her transcendental eye that will awaken her from her ignorance. Okay, Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments?
You're mentioning about how people plunder wealth by force and manipulation and everything. But when I'm just trying to remember, when Arjuna has the name Dhananjaya, how come he has that name? Is this on pastime?
Yeah. But he didn't in some cruel way steal someone else's wealth.
Right.
I don't know if Arjuna ever did that. The Kurus, wait, who stole whose cows? The Kurus stole King Virata's cows, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
And the Pandavas fought the Kurus, it was sort of preliminary practice for the battle of Kurukshetra, to get the cows back. So the Kurus, under the leadership of Duryodhana, did some stealing. But I don't think the Pandavas ever behaved like that. Maybe Bhima to get into a fight with somebody would.
I think he's called the
Dhananjaya
because he went to get the sacrificial gold from Manhattan.
Yes, the story, yeah.
Oh, that was the story.
Dhanam, Prahinam, Ajakur, Udicham, Dishibhurujaha. The four Pandavas went off in the four directions, but Arjuna went north, and there he found the, what was the king's name?
Mandata.
King Mandata?
I think so.
Had performed many yagas in the previous yuga, and he gave away the gold utensils to the brahmanas, to the priests, and they couldn't carry, they took some of it, but they couldn't carry all this gold, so they just dumped it there, and they left it in a big pile. And nobody ever took it. Maybe nobody saw it, or maybe they thought, this is somebody else's property, we're not going to take it. Nobody took it. It was huge piles of gold utensils sitting there for ages. Arjuna found them.
Right.
So he didn't steal anybody else's property. It was sitting there, you know, public domain.
Right.
But for that, he got the name Dhananjaya.
Yeah.
Aluksamas.
The six aspects of bhakti that you were mentioning refer respectively to Vaidhi Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti?
Yes, according to Jiva Goswami, in his commentary.
On that verse?
Yes. Well, no, I think in two or three or four verses later he mentions that. He refers back to it, but he's not in the commentary on that exact verse, and then the commentary on the verse a little bit later. Hare Krishna.
When people misplace that possessiveness towards each other in material life, that's when the psychologists say their relationships are codependent and dysfunctional.
Yes.
And when they read our scriptures, they might even think, you know, that these relationships like Shachi Mata or Mata Kanda, that she's
It can look like that for someone who doesn't understand, yeah. I don't know, do we have scholars making such critiques?
They call Lord Chaitanya the madman of Bengal.
And do they have any psychoanalysis of his mother? I don't know. Yeah, there was one
the perverted reflection.
There was one once, when young scholar who I met, who was in University of Massachusetts, and yeah, he was doing research on Mother Shachi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was his name?
I forget, something with a C. they can misunderstand like that.
Perverted reflection is there in there was one Shachajit Rai movie in which the boy's mother was just pining away as if, you know, just taken straight out of Vaishnava literature, but applied in this mundane way.
Yes.
And thoroughly contaminated in the process.
Yes.
And misleading. Mm-hmm. Well.
Most mundane poetry is like that. It's just, you know, the same rasas, but applied to mundane people, and it's just, for Vaishnavas, it's disgusting. You know, we can't even tolerate to read this mundane literature.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, It's the treasure of India, Kalidas and so on. Kalidas worshipped like Shakespeare. But I tried to read Shakuntala. I couldn't take it. It's tasteless. Nirasa is what...
it's offensive, actually.
Offensive, but even, you know, even if you don't, you know, judge it like that, it's just tasteless. There's no enjoyment in it for a Vaishnava.
Duryodhana,
yes,
they were shouting ecstatically,
Rana, Purva,
Rana.
They're
just referring to Mithyalism.
Well, he'll have
Kavya.
To...
Yeah, painting in ecstatic form.
Well, there is mundane enjoyment in it, but one, that's only for those who haven't tasted bhakti rasa.
Yadi kavya raso nahi kavya rasa.
Wow, yeah. It's not, there is real kavya rasa, but it's not what you think. It's not that. Forget that. I mean, that's, yeah.
Only Krishna can be the healthy repository of those emotions.
Hey,
we all want those. We want to.
He's the nayaka. He's the hero. And there's one hero and one heroine in all real drama. Although, you know, they have their expansions and they have their devotees and they're all involved too. But Krishna's in the center, Krishna and Radha.
He's ashraya.
Yeah. That ashraya may appear in his expansions, Vilasa expansions, but he should always be in the picture. Otherwise, this becomes despicable. Tasteless. But people, yeah, this is the power of Maya. People don't have access to the real taste and they're actually satisfied eating stool and drinking urine.
And then they get psychologically
ill. Oh, yeah.
That's why they get psychologically
ill. Oh, yeah. And physically ill. Yeah, their lives are a mess. Yeah. Okay, anything else?
Yeah. What's the name of that chakra with the soul?
Anahata? Isn't that right? Anahata is the heart chakra.
Anahata.
Anahata. Anahata is strucken. Unstrucken. Why is it called that? Yeah, if you could kill someone if you hit him there. No, but I don't think that's why it's called that.
The yogis, they speak of anahata nada. And musicians also speak of nada.
Well, that is, yeah. Well, that's nada. You know, in the Upanishads, and Shankaracharya has his own shloka and is quoted at the beginning of Alankar Kostava, how nada, how sound, comes from the Muladhara chakra in the form of nada, and then goes through four stages, and then comes out of your mouth. Mm. So in the third,
and that sound in
second stage. Is in the heart, third stage is in the throat, and the fourth stage is in the mouth. So the anahata nada is the second phase of sound as manifested in the heart. It really, the modern linguists have their idea of analysis of different depths of language. You have the physical sound, you have the mental conception of words, but even before you form words in your mind, you have ideas that you haven't yet tagged words onto. So that can be identified with the anahata nada, where you've got conceptions, but you haven't really verbalized them yet. You haven't attached words to them.
Isn't that analogous to those different levels of speech that we speak of? Like, you know, there's paschanti.
That's it, exactly. That's what I was referring to. The paschanti and vaikari is the last.
Those are
madhyama, paschanti, and vaikari.
Those are modern languages.
No, but what they're talking about the different levels of the manifestation of speech is really the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, the phonological, grammatical, semantic levels of speech are corresponding to that.
In music, anahata, there's ahatanad and anahatanad, and ahata means that which is produced by friction. Either through the vocal cords,
yes,
or through striking
sound. That makes sense, because there's no actual friction produced until the sound goes up to the throat.
Mm-hmm.
In the throat, friction is produced.
Yeah.
In the heart, it's frictionless. It's
yeah.
It's just mental.
It's like the music of the spheres or something.
Yeah, mental music.
Yeah.
No, music of the spirits, that's supposed to be the original nada. Yes.
Sha is sha.
Okay. Then everyone has to have a different size tumbler, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why they have different ones. They have different male and female, but then each singer, according to his particular vocal range,
yes,
he has to tune it accordingly.
Yes.
And that's why they don't have any absolute pitch, they have a movable pitch.
Yes.
So it's understood that everybody's different.
Okay. Thank you, all glory, Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam.